Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. It's Monday, January 31st, 2022. I'm Maggie Lake. And here with me today is Mark Ritchie, Managing Partner and CIO of RTM Capital Advisors. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Good, Maggie. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah. And once again, an action-packed day with a lot to talk about. U.S. stock markets rallying right into the close here to close out the month of January. The NASDAQ up, I think, as it's still sort of settling, up almost 3.5%. I mean, we saw this really big surge like right in the last hour of trade. Russell up, S&P green across the board. But let's remember, this is capping off a really painful month, especially for some of those tech names. And I think we're all wondering as we watch this, Mark, by the way, the VIX also down 10% in this. I think we're looking at this and wondering, is this the bottom?
Sure.
Is the bottom in? Have we seen the bottom?
Right. Do we have a bottom? So good news, bad news. Which do we want to cover first? The bad news, in my view, is we're already in a cyclical bear market type correction or bear market environment. I can get into the specifics of kind of why I think that is. And this is potentially a move I've been looking for months. The good news, though, is that it last Monday looks to be a pretty key technical low for the short term. So, and today's move and bounce sort of should have been expected after we had what looked like at least some short-term capitulatory lows. And this is, yeah, it's month, you know, maybe a little bit of month-end window dressing, but or short covering. I didn't look at the final volume runs today. I don't think volume was that impressive, but this is sort of expected. So the question, where do we go from here? And what are the sort of the key things to look at, technically speaking? I can get into those in any which.
Yeah, let's dive in. Why do you think this? We're already in a cyclical bear market?
Well, the percentage of stocks that are already well below their long-term averages. And I've been talking about this really kind of got to go back almost 6 months. But if you look at the advance off the COVID lows in March, we had a whole group of stocks, the stay at home names, that entire area of the market that led, those actually topped early last year. Then that was followed by other risk assets that topped, say, spring into midsummer. You could throw crypto as well into that group. But some of the other enterprise software type names, some of your higher flyer, but with earnings on the table started to top. And then you had your payments and sort of the last of the tech ones go in the fall. And then that was followed by mega cap tech late last year and then into January. And then we saw sort of the overall market break. So the number of bulls in the herd has been deteriorating for months. And I highlighted this, I think, in the fall, saying if that doesn't improve and markets go higher, which is sort of what we had in the small caps, you had the IWM try and break out and fail. Mm-hmm. And then we had sort of significant technical damage done. That the small caps are already in a bear market. They're off over 20%.
IWM, you're talking about Russell, right?
Yeah, sorry, yes. And then if you look at the NASDAQ, I mean, Monday's low was something like 19% on the composite. So, you know, I don't use the 20% bogey. I look at the deterioration we've seen under the surface is what you see in bear markets. So yeah. If it walks like a duck and sounds like a duck, it is one as far as we're concerned. And if mega cap tech trades poorly, even through, say, the rest of the earnings season, or starts to make new lows, I think you'll see last week's lows go. But that doesn't necessarily mean we're going to go meaningfully lower. I'm just saying right now, the preponderance of evidence is that we're already in that sort of cyclical bear market correction. where we go from here, there's a couple things I'd be looking at. And some of the signals, you know, in terms of last Monday are, I think, significant, at least in the short term. And we can get into that if you like.
So you, I want to just step back to something that you just said, which is, so even if that level holds, it doesn't, you don't see a bounce. What happens from here? If this is not the bottom, do we bounce along the bottom? Are we looking at another leg down?
Certainly. And of course, these are the questions everybody wants to know, right? So if you look at last Monday, it was sort of a classic short-term capitulatory low. And what I mean by short-term is certainly days, hopefully weeks. Could it be the ultimate low? Of course. That's why there's a number of things you should watch. But just sort of to highlight, you had the VIX hit nearly 40. You had put call levels hit the highest since March or April of 2020. And for those who, you know, aren't familiar, that just means, you know, plenty of people either outright hedging or outright making short bets. When the preponderance of participants are making those bets, they don't pay off. Mm. You know, when everybody rushes for insurance at the same time, you're not going to need it. It's when you don't have the insurance that that often the market is most vulnerable, at least in the short term. We also had, you know, some sentiment measures hit pretty bearish levels. AAII bear reading was over 50%. Last time that happened was at the COVID lows. Last time before that was at the lows in Q4 of 2018. Now, so often people will go, I guess, you know, throw caution to the wind and start buying. Here's the other part. I haven't bought really anything meaningfully yet because I'm not one to just try and catch falling knives. The point being, when you see a momentum technical low like we had last Monday, you want to look at that as sort of a key measure of market behavior. So if we retest those lows, which markets often do that are basing or trying to put in lows or a range, you want to see, does volatility hit new highs? Does sentiment go to new lows? Or does it, this is where you want to look for convergences or divergences, excuse me, in the market. So a classic one would be what if a market has made a momentum low and then starts to make or challenge those prices, where is momentum trading relatively speaking? So often meaningful lows, if you look at this in some of the classic bottoms that aren't just a V-shaped bottom, you will see that what usually happens is prices will often make or retest or make incremental new lows, but volatility does not confirm those, saying that, hey, the worst of it is over. Again, I wouldn't throw caution to the wind, but this is also where you'll also see certain areas of the market will trade much better than the general market. And that's what I'm most interested in. So let's say that Monday's lows are retested in a month, or a week, or maybe even 3 months, depending upon, you know, the outlook for the economy and the Fed. You know, we could be in a range here for a while, but I want to see then what groups of the market are not making new lows. That's going to be the key and the tip off to say these are the areas of the market you want to focus on, or this is going to be the potential new area of leadership in the market. The only area I'm seeing right now that has held up extremely well is oil.
Yeah.
But if the market is going to make a meaningful advance over the next, you know, 3-6 months, you're going to need more than one group.
Hey, everyone. We're going to take a quick break right now to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE. People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because we've been getting earnings coming out. And even when it seemed in the beginning, even when the earnings reports looked pretty good and there weren't any real bombshells in the guides, there's nothing that could make investors happy. Nothing seemed good enough. Then you got Apple and that changed a little bit. And we have big tech earnings coming out this week, including Alphabet, Meta, Amazon. I mean, some of the gorillas out there. Does that matter? And even if they're good and stabilize, is that the kind of leadership that would matter? Like what where else would you be looking for? Hard to think it's the first ones that turned for you in that bear market, because they were really that stay at home play. They're really beaten up down a lot. What are you looking at? Is it fundamental or purely technically driven?
Well, right now, obviously the response to the earnings is going to be important. So Apple obviously was a feather in the bull's cap and sort of buoyed the market. Apple is the largest percent in terms of the index itself. So that positive response was very helpful. But ideally, even let's say the remainder of the mega caps trade well post earnings, the market will continue to bounce. But you want to look beyond that. If they're the only things holding up the market, that's not a very robust advance. That's kind of the point. So when mega cap tech really started to roll over, that's when you saw the general market get hit, while a lot of the other smaller components of the market had been selling off and trading poorly for weeks or months. I mean, right now, I think I checked, less than 20% of stocks in the NASDAQ are trading above their 50-day moving average, which tells you even about everything is short-term oversold. Mm. We need to see that number drastically improve. 80% of the market is trading below its short-term, average. That's just an indicator of the weather, to say like it's been raining pretty hard for the last week or two. But let's say hypothetically speaking that, the mega cap tech earnings do not go well in terms of you get sell-offs in Meta and Amazon and some of these other areas. I would expect the market to challenge the lows from last week. And this is my point I was making earlier. This is where we want to see then, does volatility confirm that move? Are there other areas of the market that hold up well relative to mega cap tech? Are there, or do we just splinter apart? If volatility makes new highs and the markets cannot find their footing and we just blow through last week's lows, it tells me we've got further to go here.
Yeah.
The worst thing a market can do is be oversold and stay oversold because there's just no buyers. The same thing. The best thing a market can do is continue to stay overbought. It means that there are lots of sold out bulls who need to get in. Right now, it looks like I said, Monday looks important. So I want to see how hard do we bounce from here? Today's rally was a good step in the right direction. I'd also like to see some accumulation come into the market. What I mean by that is above average volume to the upside on larger up days.
Yeah. I want to bring in this question from Lynn, because it's exactly what you're talking about. Lynn on the exchange, January 24th had one of the biggest net hedge fund buying days in the last 5 years, January 24th, last Monday, that you're all talking about. Latest CFTC non-commercial net long positioning, 211,855 contracts. Markets up again today. Question, is this a bear market rally? Are you paying attention to that hedge fund buying? Does that give you any kind of indication? What do you make of that?
Well, my guess is it's probably active managers potentially who are seeing at least a short-term low, like I was saying, in terms mm-hmm. of, I think of hedge fund buying, most of those guys are active, tactical. It could also be, of course, people adding long-term positions to their book as well. Mm-hmm. Certainly, that's something we're watching. So that's where I'm saying, I think Monday's lows are key to watch. Look, we may never even retest them. There's your, if that's a V-shaped bottom, that has been one of the trends. And given some of the negative sentiment, that could be the case. But either way, I would be increasingly surprised given how oversold we are if we just vault to new highs from here. Because we went severely below the 200-day moving average. Most historical precedents would say when you come off this much, say in the NASDAQ, you're going to need to do a little bit of base building first. So even if the low has been met, I'm saying the preponderance of evidence says there's quite a bit of overhead supply over the market. So I want to be waiting and watching. The best setup, though, may not be for 1 to 2 months. I'm willing to wait to see the balance of evidence that says, hey, not only do we have a momentum low, now we're seeing certain areas of the market trade better relative to the index or to other groups. Now we're seeing accumulation start to, you know, firm up, and not just evidence of a bottom, evidence that the wind may be strongly at our back again. And we can get into, I think the market needs to figure out some of these things in terms of Fed policy and inflation.
Yes, as
the well.
The three-letter word that we cannot have a conversation about any of it without bringing up the Fed, because there is such a wide sort of range of forecasts out there. Pretty severe disagreement about the outlook for both inflation growth and Fed policy. I want to play a clip though before we get into some of the specifics. I think that kind of underscores, you know, the debate that's going on. Alfonso Pecatiello sat down with Colin Roche, who talked about the prospect of sustained higher inflation. Let's have a listen to what they said.
To me, this is the most valuable lesson when you compare 2008 and the financial crisis response to the current environment. It becomes abundantly clear who the real money printer was, because now we're seeing real tangible signs of inflation in the real economy. And you have to sit down and ask yourself, well, what's the difference between what the Fed and the Treasury are doing today versus what was happening in 2008, 2009? And the big difference is what I was talking about earlier, where the government in the last 2-3 years has run $7 trillion worth of deficits, in essence. And versus in the 2008 period, the Recovery Act was, it seemed big at the time. But in comparison, that thing was like $795 billion or something like that.
And that full interview is available on Essential Plus and Pro tiers. And Mark, this is very much the debate we're having. And I'll tack on to Colin saying that, you know, there were headlines today. I don't know if anyone saw it in several of the papers about rents being up by 30% in some cities. It was from a Fed survey done. You know, that kind of feeds into this idea that maybe even if it has peaked, inflation may stay at this higher level. Rents lag when they show up too. So, you know, the argument is that we haven't even started to see that hit the data and hit the tape. So where do you come down, and what you're expecting from the Fed? 50 basis points in March, is it going to be as aggressive as the market seems to think? Or do you side with those who say it's a little too soon to say that? We're going to have to see how the economy does.
If you're going to put a gun to my head, I would.
And I know you try to stay agnostic about this, Mark. I know you try not to sort of really watch what the markets tell us as opposed to the pundits. But you've got to have a view on it, I would think.
Certainly. Well, you know, as a general rule, I think if you spend your time watching markets versus pundits, and your goal is to make money in markets, you should be doing that. However, what I would say is, if I have to take a stance, I am very skeptical of the 5-7 rate hike narrative. I think if you were to press me hard on it, I would say some of this is an overreaction potentially to, yes, some of the data prints, but even potential political pressures. The reality, what you just cited, though, in terms of, say, large increases in rents, large increases in people's cost of living, standard of living, if you will, this is an effective tax hike that nobody thought was, I shouldn't say nobody, but certainly your average person who has to go to the tank and go to the grocery store and pay their rent is poorer than they were a year ago. Well, yes, this is an economic problem, and it will be if it continues to persist. But it's also a major political problem, which we could get into, because I do have something that I think people should be looking at going into the midterms. But right now, yes, my view is to watch closely, because I think the Fed is a little bit backed into a corner because they have a dual mandate, but for the first time in how long, it seems that one side of the mandate is actually showing up. You know, there's been no inflation for how long? A long time, or at least that's meaningful where they have to, if not at least give lip service to it, potentially jawbone the markets and start making movements. So look, there's two scenarios on that side. One is the inflation is going to persist and the Fed is behind the curve. If that really is the case, meaning that we're going to see 5 to 7 rate hikes and the Fed is still behind the curve, there I don't see how the equity market does not go lower or continue to go lower, because the Fed is going to introduce competition for stocks that it has not seen in a long period of time. And what I mean by that is rates. If you look at, say, the average yield, even average yield of dividends compared to, say, T-bills since 2009, it has been positively tilted towards equities for over a decade. So if we're talking about a massive reversal in that dynamic, I don't see how you can, that would push me towards the secular bear market camp. Meaning if that is where these drivers are headed, we're going to see continued pressure in certain areas of the market, especially high growth, retail oriented, anything that has been driven on the promise or speculation of future earnings is going to be sold in favor of that business, which is already built and producing earnings, because it's a simple calculation of replacement costs. Who is going to want to invest their money in something where the business hasn't been fully built out and the cost of building that business is going up every month versus the business and the equipment that already exists and is yielding returns? That makes
sense. Mark has already partially answered your question. He's asking if Fed funds rate go to 2%, how low will the S&P have to go in that case? I might tack on, does that make the NASDAQ more vulnerable in this case, because maybe there are more companies that, you know, are counting on future earnings? You know, how in the market do you position for that?
Yeah, I think it will be exactly what we've seen, but probably everything goes lower. So Russell has been the weakest, followed by the NASDAQ, and then the Dow and S&P the strongest. Well, if you think about that, that's exactly what we'll continue to see. So Russell will go down, you know, take off another, 10, 15% of each one. I am skeptical of that view because I think at some point the Fed is going to have to manage the other side of the trade. So let's say the reason I'm also skeptical of that is I think some of the inflationary impulse is due to the massive amount of reflating of the economy that took place. If you look at some of these ISM or you look at the ECRI cycle work, you had this largest boom bust cycle, you know, in the history of the sample, because we shut down the whole planet and then we restarted it all. Now, of course, the Fed poured gas on, you know, and the government in terms of different stimulus poured gas on some of the reinflation in certain areas. But as that comes off the boil, I would, again, expect some of this to naturally ease.
Yeah.
Now, if that happens, and let's say the Fed only has to go 25, 50, maybe 75, and then you see that inflation come off or start to really ease, I think then you will see another rotation the other way, a potential hard bottom in the equity market. And again, the market is forward looking. So I think the market is looking out 3 months right now going, we don't know. We don't know where inflation's going to be, and we don't know how aggressive the Fed's going to be.
We've seen that in the bond market, haven't we, Mark? And Angela on the exchange has an excellent question point. If the Fed hikes at 20, if you say, okay, they're going to do it five times, if they hike 25 basis points at a time, they can only do it 2.5 times before they invert the yield curve. And I know that's something you're watching for too. Should we pay attention to that? You know, why is that important? What does that tell you for people who may not watch the bond market? And it's something the Fed would be uncomfortable with, I think, right?
Certainly. So the inverted yield curve to me is one of our sort of primary markers we would look at for a bear a more longer lasting or severe bear market. If you look at sort of the classic bear market drivers, inverted yield curve or persistent inflation, are two of them. So absolutely. However, it's not a great timing mechanism. If you look the last time the yield curve inverted, I think it was 6 to 9 months before we really had kind of that economic issues and a bloodbath in equities. Now, some people have argued, well, that would have never happened without COVID. You know, others would say, well, the market was sniffing out eventual, you know, problems and troubles. I'm not going to, it doesn't matter to me. I'm just saying, listen, that is smoke detector going off potentially months ahead of time saying, mm-hmm. listen, we're in an environment where the economy is going to be more susceptible to recession. Which means equity prices are also going to be much more vulnerable. Right now, at least say twos and tens, we're not, you know, anywhere close to being inverted. But, you know, stay tuned. We could talk again in 2 months and we may have a very different picture there.
We're going to take another quick break to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for the New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Yeah, that's right. And as we're in this period of uncertainty, added to that, and something we want to make sure we put on everyone's radar, is not just uncertainty about the number one economy in the world, but the number two really important economy in the world, and that is China. You know, we're coming to Chinese New Year, Beijing, and there's a possibility that Chinese officials may go very quiet during that period. Thankfully for us, our Weston Nakamura is not going to be silent, and he sent this report on what we need to be aware of and watch in that space.
So first of all, there's going to be further supply chain complications. The world's factories and ports are going to be completely shut down. Now, also note that authorities have been urging some factories to stay open and like encouraging workers to keep working. And they're paying subsidies of, you know, additional pay in some cases. Also, property sales. Chinese New Year is a seasonal period of strong property sales. People go home, they purchase new property. This will need to be closely watched as new home sales data once again seeing month-over-month double-digit declines at a time when developers and their creditors are in dire need of cash flows and authorities have eased conditions to buy. So a continued decline, you know, in demand during the seasonally strong period could be devastatingly bad. And then, of course, the Olympics themselves, namely the opening ceremony in which Russian President Vladimir Putin will be there in person and meeting with Xi Jinping in person. This is of obvious significance with regards to like the Ukrainian geopolitical crisis, and this will also be a very selective, you know, sort of press coverage. So that's just the tip of the iceberg. Again, we don't know what we don't know. Over this period, we might even see a relief rally in risk assets due to a lack of like kind of negative news headlines. But just be very careful if any such things should happen. Just because things are quiet from headlines doesn't mean inactivity. Silence is not quiet and vice versa. And that's it. All right. Thanks.
Great tip from Weston there on watching any rally that might come out in that period, you know, maybe not indicative of what's really going on. We know the Chinese are concerned about their economy and are potentially going to stimulate it. Of course, there's, as you mentioned before, Mark, a lot of political pressure here about, you know, more focused, I think, on inflation and what to do with that because of what we were talking about before. How is that fiscal scenario here going to play into the markets? Are you watching that? Is that something we know? We heard Colin talk about it in relation to inflation. What are you looking at in terms of the sort of fiscal political angle here?
Yeah, my view on the current political situation is a little nuanced in terms of I think right now we're in what can the Dems get done mode before midterms. And what I'm looking at, and I want to be careful so people don't take this as necessarily political statements, but what I'm watching in terms of the market and then studying a few past historical precedents. So listen, regardless of who wins or whatever, I'm saying what has happened in the past. And then what are we looking at right now? I think based upon what I'm reading and seeing and people I'm talking to, both connected to Washington and outside, that there is a potential large turnover in the offing coming in November, meaning the House and the Senate are going to potentially go red. Right. And I don't think that's an outlandish claim to make given just sort of the state of certain things. If you look, though, at what happens historically, one, either in conditions of gridlock or a large swing towards the Republicans, it tends to be bullish risk assets. Now, if you 2010 was the last example, and in that case, you had a pretty large swing for people that remember that was sort of the rise of the Tea Party and whatnot. That was while you had a sitting president in Obama who was actually quite popular, and we had a large move. I'm saying the current sitting president is not nearly as popular. So I would anticipate the markets are going to price in gridlock, which means political risk will go way down. There will be very little fears and risks surrounding that. The other periods to study would be 94 and 82. And in all three of those, it's not a massive sample size. You see, the market was sniffing that out ahead of time. There was a short sort of digestion period around the election and then significantly higher prices, say, in risk assets. So I would think that would be bullish for potential NASDAQ and, say, crypto type markets. The question will be, when does the market, if that's going to happen, when does the market start sniffing that out? And what levels are we trading at beforehand? Meaning if we go lower first in the offing.
Yeah.
But that is a potential bullish driver I think people should be looking for in the second half of the year.
And the timing may coincide with having a lot more clarity on what's happening with the economy and rates. I do want to ask you about oil, because we sort of started out talking about that being the one sector, you know, that had been leading, but we need more to join in. Oil's had a big move. I mean, I think one of the biggest in decades, I think it was 17% just in January. What are you anticipating there?
Higher prices.
I mean, really?
Well,
from
listen,
here, how much more upside?
Well, this is where historically for me, commodities have always been more of a trade than an investment. And the reason is, one, I'm not an expert, so I treat them as more rentals, you know, where I'm looking to rent commodity exposure rather than invest in it. But if you look at the action in oil and oil-related stocks at the beginning of the year, take something like the XLE, it is obvious that managers came in and were overweight, say, mega-cap tech and way underweight oil, because they started selling their mega-cap tech and tech-related issues and buying oil and oil-related names. If you look at the relative strength of stock groups, oil and oil-related names is number one, and it's not even close. And last Monday is another good indicator. The market came on, was puking positions on last Monday. Managers selling all kinds of things. Oil came off the boil for a day or two, and then immediately into new high ground. That tells me that is the most bullish indicator I have. When the weight of the market can only hold something down for a day or two, it's that classic beach ball you're holding underwater. The minute that pressure comes off, it's going to come and move to new highs. The only caveat is this situation with Russia and Ukraine. Is the oil market pricing in larger premiums there? And should, say, you know, peace talks or the idea that that situation de-escalates, will we see oil sell off? Even if that happened, I would argue based on at least the technical action, it's probably a buyable dip in the short run. So I don't see, I don't see that slowing down, at least in the short run.
And we are going to end on that bullish note. I love to do that. Mark, thank you so much. So much great material and so much to think about. We so appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Maggie. Thanks, Real Vision.
Yeah, we, of course, appreciate all of you watching. I'll be here tomorrow with Tony Greer. You know, we're going to talk a little bit more oil, of course. As always, the conversation continues on The Exchange. Take care and good luck out there.
What's up, revolutionaries? Thanks for tuning in to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. For more content like this, head over to realvision.com and get unfiltered access to the very best, brightest, and biggest names in finance.